Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a blow.
In the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome in. I'm David Gow, the boss. Sitting next to me, Carla Dawson, the gloss. How are you, Carla?
I am great after the weirdest backup Sunday in the NFL.
Backup Sunday, all the backups.
Who knew we would be like, woo, woo.
Good out. They were outstanding.
Mike White, Trevor Siemian. Yay,
love them,
guys.
Some of those are names that really nobody even knew. I mean, Mike White, that was a name from the past. He was drafted by the Cowboys. I remember when they picked him, but he was cut 5 times by 5 different teams. To think he had that moment on a big stage for the Jets, preposterous.
Crazy. Although, he did tweet out to Peyton Manning years ago, "I'm coming for your record."
Love that.
Well, and, you know, with 4 touchdowns in 1 game, at least he's starting.
Well, he's got
a long way
to go.
He's got
but
a
so
bit
much
to go.
Else on the sports calendar. Obviously, the World Series, and the series
comes home
here to Houston. Exciting times in this city.
Woo.
NFL trade deadline on Tuesday. And
tomorrow.
Then the college football playoff.
Well, the first ranking.
First rankings come out. So all this unfolding, really, here in the next 48 hours. An amazing window of time in the sports calendar.
And don't forget, the NBA season is a week old and
is there an NBA
along.
Season? Did it start? I didn't even know.
It has started. And the Lakers are not atop the Western Conference. And the Brooklyn Nets are not atop the Eastern. So
and Kyrie Irving is costing himself a lot of money.
Jeez, come on. He may be costing himself a job.
Well, we will see. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what we're going to call backup quarterback Sunday. Amazingly, 3 guys who are not household names all performed at a very high level. Mike White for the Jets, Cooper Rush for the Cowboys, and Trevor Siemian, the former Bronco quarterback, played well for the Saints.
He beat Tom Brady.
Isn't that amazing?
Or did Tom Brady beat himself? We'll uncover that.
Well, it was not a typical Tom Brady day. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you, of those three, which was the biggest surprise to you, and who of those three has the most significant upside from here?
Ooh, okay.
That will be next here. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
All right, to tee it up, remember last week, the Bengals had that huge statement win over the Ravens. The Bengals were the darlings of the NFL. I was watching ESPN Get Up, and they said the Bengals might be the best team in the AFC. That was the message last week.
That's aggressive.
And then they were going to walk in and have an easy win over the Jets, because easy win over the Jets is almost a redundant statement. I mean, how do you not beat the Jets, right?
Yes.
But they didn't know about Mike White, the great Mike White. Here he is, Mike White. And the fans were chanting Mike White.
They should do a whiteout next week. They
should do a whiteout. They embraced him. They were cheering him, Mike White, Mike White. And why not? Because White threw for 3 touchdowns and 405 yards. He was the improbable hero of the day. For the Jets, the long-suffering Jet fans, they were impassioned.
I mean, he stepped in for the injured Zach Wilson, the number 2 draft pick overall, I might say, which I thought was crazy at the time, and I still think it's crazy.
Yeah, you did not like that pick.
I didn't like it.
No, give you credit on that. Zach Wilson was a stretch. They took him. He has not performed well. But Mike White yesterday, I mean, he's a guy who, just to the other end of the spectrum, if Zach Wilson has the pedigree of being the number 2 overall pick, Mike White has the pedigree of being cut by five different teams. And yet yesterday at age 26, he got his chance.
He got his chance and he made the most of it. And, you know, I think if you're Robert Saleh, head coach of the Jets, yeah. and you are a defensive-minded coach and you are desperate for a win, his comments about, you know, what's the future, who's going to be the quarterback, and he's like, basically, well, anything can happen here. Like, he's fired up, but he is right to not commit to anything at seeing 1 week. But my gosh, he sure played lights out, and Zach Wilson has not done that for the Jets at all.
Well, you don't hear a coach say what Robert Saleh said yesterday
very often.
Usually they're more diplomatic or they have coach speak.
Coach speak.
When asked whether Mike White could be the quarterback of the future, I mean, that wasn't just will he start for the rest of the season. The question was, will he be the quarterback of the future for the New York Jets? And the answer was, anything is possible. What Mike does with this opportunity, it's amazing. He's got the whole world in front of him. He's just got to take advantage of it. I mean, that's quite a statement. And it's an implied negative statement, obviously, about Zach Wilson.
Well, and you know, if you look at what he's got in front of him data-wise and record-wise with Zach Wilson, that's fair. The NFL is a business. And, you know, you're not guaranteed what you get in the draft. You draft potential, and you draft what you think is going to be your talent. But if this Mike White train continues like it did yesterday, there's your guy. Why would you look elsewhere?
Well, the reason why I'm not ready to get on that bandwagon is, of course, it was just one game.
Right.
There's probably a reason he was cut five times. And then the amazing thing yesterday was that he really didn't complete anything downfield. Nearly all of his attempts were short. Nothing traveled more than 15 yards
right.
in the air.
Right.
45 attempts. He was check down Charlie. Now, it worked. But the other question is, why didn't the Bengals adjust? If all Mike White was going to do was dump the ball off short, why weren't the Bengals adjusting their defense and shutting him down?
Well, this is exactly, you brought up the best point, because we've already given Mike White his love. I mean, three touchdowns and 405 yards, and no quarterback for the New York Jets has passed over 400 yards since 2000. That's 21 years ago. That's a legal drinking person's age ago. Like that.
That is bizarre.
That's amazing.
It's been that long.
It's been incredible.
But they've been bereft of quarterbacks.
They have. And so, hey, give him his due there. But to me, that stat is more glaring and more convicting on the Bengals' defense. How in the world could you have given up over 400 points on the day? That's where I'm scratching my head. And you're right. It's about adjustments. This is on Zach Taylor and his DC. Why didn't they see it was coming? They had an 11-point lead going into the fourth quarter.
An amazing win for the Jets, 34-31 over the Bengals. Bengals fall to 5-3. Okay, another backup quarterback who excelled yesterday, Cooper Rush in Sunday Night Football.
You're happy, our Cowboys resident fan right here.
He filled in for Dak Prescott and filled in well. Now, the first half was a little bit shaky, and the Cowboys did not play well around Cooper Rush. I mean, one of my frustrations at the end of the first half, the score was 10-3, Vikings with the lead, and it really should have been 7-6 because at that point, Greg the Leg had missed a kick within 40 yards, and there was a series where the Vikings were stopped. It was fourth down, fourth and five, and they drew the Cowboys offsides on the punt, and so that enabled the Vikings to go down and get another 3 points. It should have been 7-6 at the half. It was 10-3. Yet they didn't phase Cooper Rush and the Cowboys. They were able to hold it together. And in the second half, the offense started to gel.
And I loved seeing Cooper Rush. I thought he seemed very in control. His stats of 24 of 40 are okay, but he had 325 yards and two TDs. And I love the prospect of Cooper to Cooper. Cooper Rush to Amari Cooper. Yeah. I mean, Amari Cooper had 122 yards and CeeDee Lamb 112. That's pretty nice for your two receivers. You know, those are some great numbers.
Well, Cooper Rush is no Dak Prescott, but he made just enough throws. He got a couple breaks. There was that one long pass down on the right side in the fourth quarter on the final drive when Amari caught the bobbling mm-hmm. catch. It was in the Vikings defender's hand,
Cooper,
and it bounced out. So that was a bit of a break. I will say, and of course, finally, Cooper to Cooper, the final catch that Cooper made in the corner was an outstanding throw and catch. The ball was put where the defender couldn't get it. Cooper went up, grabbed it, got 2 feet in. Excellent execution by both the quarterback and the wide receiver. The other play that really stood out to me on that fourth quarter drive, that it's gone a bit unnoticed, given that Amari made the final touchdown catch, was a big conversion catch that Elliott made. It was a catch and run. Mm-hmm. He caught it short of the first down, and then he broke at least three tackles to get to the first down. He just put his head down and said, I'm going to get the first. I'm going to convert it. It took the Cowboys down to a first and goal at the four, and that was a signature play by Elliott, a big stand-up play that enabled the Cowboys to get into position and go in for the win rather than kick a field goal.
Well, and here we are talking about the Cowboys, having just talked about the Jets, who I thought were crazy to take Zach Wilson where they did. Look what the Cowboys did at number 11 with Micah Parsons. His influence on that team and his presence cannot go unnoticed. He had a team-high 11 tackles last night, four tackles for a loss and a sack. That guy is so smart. You know, he's really into chess, and he compares himself to the queen, you know, the different pieces, the knights and all that kind of stuff on the chessboard. He is smart. He is athletic. He is fast. He is driven. I think we might be looking at the Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he stands out as the Defensive Rookie of the Year. And then Randy Gregory has finally got his game together.
Yeah,
it was never
a
question about his talent. It was always the off-field battles, and he battled with depression and other issues. He was smoking marijuana for a long time, and the NFL wouldn't allow that. But now he seemingly put it all together, and you can see him when you watch. He just pops off the field because of the speed with which he moves. And when you think about Micah Parsons' pace of play and Randy Gregory's pace of play, and they're going to get DeMarcus Lawrence back in a few weeks, they're really going to have some great, great figures in that front seven of their defense. The other thing I'd highlight about that Cowboys defensive front was how well they stopped the run. I mean, Dalvin Cook is an exceptional running back, and the Vikings came into the game hoping to be able to run the ball, and they held him to just 78 yards.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, credit Dallas. It looks good. What's happening there?
I mean, last year, really, their run defense was probably the worst aspect of their entire team, and they brought in a lot of bodies to shore that up, and that was notable last night. So a good win for the Cowboys and a really fun night for Cooper Rush. It was fun to see his father just beaming, his wife beaming. I mean, these are family members who have watched him chase a career for
really
long time.
That's awesome. And, you know, this is how Tom Brady got his start. Someone goes down and someone else steps up, and this is what happens.
And then the Saints carted off Jameis Winston, which you hated to see.
Oh, that was really – I hate seeing that.
ACL tear for Winston. He's out for the season.
And MCL, too.
And MCL as well. So Trevor Siemian came in, and he played pretty well.
I was like, this cannot be the same Trevor Siemian that was in Denver. It just can't be.
Well, the big difference –
But there's not that many Trevor Siemians.
That's right. But he's got Sean Payton. This is the Sean Payton version of Trevor Siemian, and Payton is a master. Talk about quarterback whisperer.
Yes.
He truly is, and one of the great offensive play callers in the NFL today, if not across all time. He's really exceptional at running an offense.
No, he really is. And, you know, Payton also has the Bucs number. I mean, he seems to always play. He's got his team ready and plays very well against Tampa Bay, which is – I mean, you got to take advantage. When Brady has an uncharacteristically bad game like he did last night, he had two turnovers in the first half alone that led to 9 points. And then that one at the end of the game. Oh, my gosh. When you give Brady a minute 30 on the clock, you know there's going to be a score.
Oh, and I thought, I'm just going to watch it happen again. Here
too.
Comes Brady. He's going to move them down to kick the game-winning field goal. But the Saints defense is really rugged. They always play Brady well.
They do. They do. And New Orleans, credit them. In the first half alone, they had eight different guys catching passes. That's hard to defend.
That's a Sean Payton offense.
It is. It's a Sean Payton offense. It was pretty exciting. 36-27 Saints over Tampa Bay. Are you worried about the Bucs?
We'll come back to that.
Okay.
We come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Texas Monthly contributor Richard Justice. Everybody knows he's one of the great MLB experts. We're going to ask him, in last night's game, the Braves at home with a chance to close out the series in the first inning had a grand slam. You could almost feel the celebration underway in the stadium, in the clubhouse, and now they come back to Houston. The series is not over. We're going to ask Richard, is the momentum so significant? Is the emotion so significant? Should Braves fans now be concerned, even though there are two games the Astros have to win? It'll be Richard Justice up next when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the SportsMap Radio Network, it is the venerable Richard Justice. He is a Texas Monthly contributor and expert on all things MLB. Richard, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Thank you for having me, David and Carla.
Well, great to have you, and what a game that was last night. It seemed the Braves were on their way with a grand slam in the first inning, and everything swung back the other way. What's your read on the emotions in the state of this series now?
You know, I think the thing we know about this series is what we already knew. The Astros are a really mentally tough team, and they just are going to play. Look, I know that you remember in games 2 and 3 against the Red Sox when they just got wiped out. The narrative around the country is it's over. Dan Shaughnessy in the Boston Globe wrote, you know, the baseball gods have picked the Red Sox to punish the cheating Astros. And I sort of agreed that it looked like it was going to be a short series. And it, you know, like a voice kept telling me, hey, be careful. Don't ever doubt these guys. And that's what we've seen. Ultimately, you know, they may not win this series, but it's a reminder that this is a team that just goes out, has a short-term memory, and goes out and plays every day. And it comes down to, you know, how guys are going to perform.
You bring up great points, Richard, and I love the mental toughness because they are mentally tough. You're right. When they gave up 21 runs in those two games against Boston, it looked like they were dead. So we're looking, you know, one game and that's it for these guys. Talk a little bit about the job that Dusty Baker is doing and how much influence he has on this toughness. I mean, for example, last night, pinch hitting Marwin Gonzalez was a brilliant decision, and then moving Alex Bregman to the seventh spot. Talk about Dusty Baker's role in the guy's mindset and where they are now and how this can push him forward.
Yeah, you know, Carl, I think it's huge, and I think it goes back to why was he hired in the first place. Mm-hmm. He stepped into a room that was broken, and there was chaos, and I mean, they knew they were going to catch hell every place they played. They got somewhat of a reprieve because in 2020 there were not many fans in the stands. But what he has done in 50, 60 years of the game is he's done everything that can be done and seen everything that can be seen. And there's just a calmness about Dusty. You know, and the players, these core players, they were closer to A.J. Hinch than I'd ever seen a manager-player relationship. And guys like Correa and McCullers and Bregman, they were freaked out that they were going to be playing for somebody other than A.J. Hinch. And to his everlasting credit, A.J. Hinch ended up talking through the thing with the guys and said, look, here's what's about to happen to you guys. You're going to get to go play for one of the great managers and, more importantly, one of the great people in the history of the game. In a situation where there's no calm, he brings a sense of calm every single day. And I just think in a long season where you're going to have ups and downs, that steadiness plays well every single day. And what we saw, you know, it's hard for a guy like Dusty, who has such trust in his players, to shake up the lineup the way he did.
Yes.
And I know he probably had a long conversation with Alex Bregman before dropping him in the lineup. But I think he probably sold that I'm doing this for your benefit. Because you are really struggling. I think those of us who watch can see Bregman was the point that he was mentally fried. In the regular season, you'd get a day or two off to regather yourself. You don't get that in the postseason. And so it was just take a deep breath. Guys look at places in the batting order from a different perspective. And when they're changed, it changes their comfort level. Or maybe, and in the case of Bregman in this, maybe that's getting him in the comfort level. And to go to Marwin in that situation, nothing he could have done would have played better in the clubhouse, because Marwin is looked at in that room as a member of the family, and for him to come through in that situation, it just had the right feel for it.
We're talking to Richard Justice, MLB expert and contributor at Texas Monthly. So one of the notable things about this series is all the innings being logged by all of these relievers. And it's funny because as I'm thinking about this question, I want to ask you if this is good for baseball and or if this is just a unique situation with the makeup of these teams. I remember sitting down with you and we were talking about some of the great rotations of the past. That Orioles team long ago with Jim Palmer and all those great pitchers. And, of course,
you're going way back.
The Braves. But Richard Justice is one of the top historians in all things baseball. I mean, Richard, you've seen so many of these great rotations, yet these two teams really don't have that. Do you see baseball ever coming back to the old guard and those kinds of rotations again? Is this a unique thing with these teams?
I think it's unique in that 2020 was unique. The workload on guys was so limited that every team was very, very concerned about how much to ramp up the workload this year. We only had four pitchers throw 200 innings this year. I think Greinke led the Astros with 171. So everybody was conscious of that. And so what also happened is by the time the Astros and Braves got to the playoffs, there were injuries all over the place. The Braves lost their best starter, Mike Soroka. The Astros lost their best starter, Lance McCullers. And I think also at this time of year, you're fatigued, and so you're just trying to get through games. The Milwaukee Brewers have been doing this for a couple of years now. They call it just out-getters. Who's the start? Not the starting pitcher, it's the initial out-getter, and just try to get through 27 innings. But that's not to say that teams don't still value starting pitching. You know, when the Dodgers went out and got Scherzer, and Max Scherzer, and put him in a rotation with Walker Buehler and Luis Urias and Walker Buehler, their idea was to have a traditional rotation in October. And, you know, Kershaw got hurt, Max got hurt. It just didn't work out. And I think that's what you're seeing just and today, now, going into game six, I think that the both pitching staffs are so messed up that they're just trying to get – they're going to start the game going inning by inning. You saw it last night. We had a guy last night, Tucker Davidson, made his first major league start in the World Series. And you heard John Smoltz going, you know, he's going Brian Snicker is going batter by batter. Is it good for baseball? No, it's terrible for baseball because guys like what – see, guys – part of the mystique of the game is to go out and see Bob Gibson pitch or to go out and see a Scherzer or a Kershaw. They bring something to the game. And it also, the game times are going to kill the sport. I mean, the games have gone on way too long. The games have been played too slow. That's somewhat a byproduct of the way, players don't know it. Players could play eight hours, and they would look at it as, I didn't even know it was 8 hours. We just grinding through. But the game times are really bad, and one way to do that is to have a pitch clock, to have make pitchers work faster, which I'm sure we're going to have next year, and to have starting pitchers go deeper into the game and let them control the narrative. But in the case of these two teams, with all the injuries and with the fatigue, that's just not where they're at right now. It's every game is a scramble.
You know, it's so true. And, of course, we cannot leave this conversation with you without talking about Carlos Correa, our on-the-field leader, our off-the-field leader, our young gun who we may be seeing. His last week in an Astros uniform. So I want to ask you, Richard, any way that we can keep Correa? If not, where do you think he's going to go? And can we successfully replace him? Goodness.
They have a couple of guys at the top of the minor league food chain that can step in and play, but not at his level and not with his presence. And I thought George Springer in this string of 5 years where the Astros have won more games than any other American League team, won more than twice as many postseason games. I mean, I think that core of guys. I think tomorrow will be their 19th World Series games together.
Oh,
and that's amazing. Guys go their whole careers and don't dream of three World Series games, much less 19. But I thought losing Springer a year ago would gut the organization. I thought he was the most important player. And they just rolled on. And one of the great stories of this season is how they folded kids right into the mix. Kyle Tucker, Alvarez, Myers, and the young pitchers.
It's been an amazing run. Yes, no, you're absolutely right. Rich, I want to stop you there, but thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate all your insights with the series now returning to Houston.
Thanks, guys.
It's the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Okay, every year the NFL trade deadline is always interesting, but never quite as dramatic or headline-filled as baseball. However, it was a big-time move today. The Rams picking up Von Miller. And Von Miller is still a quality player, one of the top pass rushers in the league. This is a big-time pickup for a Rams team that is poised to try to win now.
Oh, that is the message sent today. You know, bringing in Matthew Stafford in the offseason, who's in his early 30s, and then Denver's linebacker Von Miller, 32 years old. I mean, and they got him for peanuts. I'm sorry. A 2022 second and third rounder. That's it. Well, and then the Broncos are going to pay $9 million of his remaining $9.8 million salary.
So that second round pick, the third round pick, those will be late round picks.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rams now sit at 7-1, and they're only going to get better. So it will be a later round pick. Now, the Broncos are picking up that salary, but, of course, the Rams only get Von Miller for half a season. He will be a free agent at the end of this year, so it's more of a rental than a buy. Von Miller at age 32, the argument would be, well, he doesn't have as much left in the tank. But he has played well this year. He's got 4.5 sacks already. And, boy, there's been no slowing down Von Miller. And when you put him next to an Aaron Donald.
And Jalen Ramsey on the outside.
That's right. He may be even more explosive because most teams are having to double-team Aaron Donald, and that may free things up for Von Miller.
100%. And, you know, you look at Von Miller, he is the all-time career sacks leader with 110.5. I mean, this guy is just what you said, showing no sign of slowing down. And the Rams, they've traded away 5 2022 draft picks. The message is clear. Sean McVay wants a Super Bowl, and he wants it now.
Yeah, their GM Snead, he doesn't care about draft picks, does he? I mean, he is just using them as currency to go get players. Of course, what that often does, it means that you bring in players who have large salaries, and then you've got salary cap issues. Not the case with Von Miller because of the accommodation made by the Broncos. But he does have some highly paid guys. Rams will have some cap issues, and they'll have a dearth of draft picks going forward. So they better win now. But I think when they look at the landscape as it is today, they are 7-1. Their only loss came against the Cardinals. But I think they feel like they can sneak up and get that Cardinals team. They beat the Buccaneers.
Because now the Cardinals are without J.J. Watt.
Cardinals no longer have J.J. Watt. And then they are adding Von Miller, same position, basically. So it is intriguing. I think the Rams really think this could be their year. When they look across the NFC, there's not a big-time dominant team. They surely have to worry about the Buccaneers. They surely got to worry about the Packers. The Cardinals already beat them. Cowboys are there. But this is a chance, really. They are a team that could be right there at the end in the NFC.
I mean, I think this is a favorite in the NFC by far to win it. Because, and I'll tell you who is not happy about what's going down here, is Russell Wilson in Seattle, who is like, people, I asked you in the offseason, shore me up. I need help. And now look what you've done. Look who I've got to face now. I've got to face Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, and now Von Miller. And you have not fortified the offensive line that I've asked you to do. I'm about to get this little pin out of my finger and me not happy. I think we're going to be hearing some.
Well, the Seahawks have about 24 hours to figure this out. Less than that to figure that out with the trade deadline. I mean, Russell Wilson obviously has wanted more out of the Seahawks general management.
He's been very vocal and honest about that.
He wants more talent around him. And I guess he's getting close to coming back. Now, Geno Smith played pretty well yesterday, but that's another matter. Russell Wilson is an elite quarterback, and they do. He's a guy you'd want to build everything around, give him the full chance to win. Now, at this trade deadline, it is interesting right now. There are so many teams that have basically a break-even record or have at least three wins, so they're really not out of the running. And that might reduce the opportunities for trade, right? There aren't some teams that are just, there are many teams, but there aren't so many teams that are just clear losers, clear sellers here at the deadline. But one team, well, several teams that are sellers, the Texans are clearly sellers. The Dolphins are going nowhere. They're 1-7. And they have some talent that could be shipped away for future draft capital. It would be intriguing to see, would the Texans trade a Brandon Cooks? Would they trade a Zach Cunningham or a safety Justin Reed? Those are guys who would draw interest.
Well, I think the Texans, they have given me no confidence, have shown me no, I don't have any evidence that they know what they're doing and this is a thoughtful approach. Because at this point, you look at, they were so proud of the team's effort yesterday. Well, they had scored nothing going into the fourth quarter, essentially, and then 22 unanswered points. But let's clarify that 22 unanswered points. It was with Wolford at quarterback and the entire second. I mean, basically took out all their starters. What are you doing, Texans? I mean, you are 1-7. Don't you want a good draft pick? Like, make a decision. Either start building around the pieces that you have that are decent, which is basically Brandon Cooks. Poor Davis Mills, you can't catch a break because he's got no one. But or start getting some draft capital for these things. What are you messing around with Deshaun Watson with? He's not going to play for you again. I am frustrated with the Texans. They've got to make a decision what direction they're going to. And what I've heard is that the brass in Houston wants Deshaun Watson gone because it's a waste and a distraction. But Caserio has the final say, and he's now up the ante, apparently, for what he wants for him, which is hilarious because the guy hasn't taken the field. The lawsuits are still there. And why do you think he's worth more now? This is very confusing to me. So I have zero hope for the Texans. And then you've got Brandon Cooks. Last week, when they shipped Mark Ingram to New Orleans, Brandon Cooks was very vocal on Twitter. It was B, you know what, you know, BS word. Can't say that on radio. And he was like, such a joke. He doesn't have faith in this organization. So don't build around Brandon Cooks. He didn't want to be here. And you could be facing another, not Deshaun Watson situation legally, but a situation where a star doesn't want to play for an organization who has no compass, has no idea where they're going.
Well,
you tell me what you
at
think.
At this point with Brandon Cooks, he was complaining that the Texans traded Mark Ingram. What I would like to do or see the Texans do is to trade away these players for future draft picks.
Right.
Because they're going nowhere. They should be sellers.
But
they
they're not committed to that they're not going nowhere, I don't think. Do you?
Well, I hope they don't have any illusions that they're going to the playoffs this year. I mean, this is a team that doesn't have any possibility of making the playoffs.
Oh.
So they should be sellers. I mean, if there's a nice opportunity to get some draft capital for Zach Cunningham or Justin Reed or Brandon Cooks, I think the Texans ought to grab it. They did grab it with Mark Ingram, although it was a very, very late pick, seventh-round pick. That's not draft capital. That's not going to really change the game for the Texans.
No, and you got rid of someone who actually was decent for you.
Now, Miami, they should be sellers. There's a possibility that Devontae Parker, who has returned from injury, he caught 8 passes for 85 yards yesterday, that perhaps he could be traded to a contender who needs a receiver. Xavien Howard as well. I mean, he's a good quality cornerback. Mm-hmm. He's not been happy with his contract.
Yeah, I know. They're going to have to deal with his contract talks if they keep him.
And then Denver has already shown they're trading away Von Miller. They're not anticipating they're going to make a run into the playoffs. So they're going to get some calls on Kyle Fuller, maybe Kareem Jackson. Mm-hmm. He's a quality corner still. He's a guy who could be traded here at the deadline. And then the Giants, too, they could well be sellers, particularly if they lose tonight.
Right. I agree with you there. And what I want to hear your thoughts. You're the Texans GM. The trade deadline is tomorrow. Knowing all that you know, which is all what we all know, what do you do with Deshaun Watson? What's your best thought?
Well, the question, of course, is when can you get the most for him? And so you have in mind what his value is, and you try to get it now. I think for the fate of the organization and clarity, it would be great to make this trade happen now. So it's not this cloud that still hangs over the entire organization. But there is a possibility that they can get more. Whatever they get for him, it's going to be draft picks, and they won't be able to use those draft picks until the draft. So you have between now and the draft to get the currency that's going to come back to you. So the only question is, can you get more currency now, or can you get more currency perhaps after the legal drama has unfolded? the legal drama could work for or against you, right?
Right.
If it looks really damning for Deshaun, then his trade value would decrease. He could be suspended for a long period of time next year, which would greatly diminish his value. But the return is draft picks, and so it's a little bit of a bet on whether you think you can get more draft picks now or more draft picks later, but you won't get any benefit from them until April when the draft comes.
Well, you know, he has the no-trade clause, and he has only waived Miami for that. So Carolina, I think that's one of the reasons they stepped out, too, because he did not waive the no-trade clause for Carolina. So it's interesting because Miami and Roger Goodell, we have seen this past week, has said, we don't have any reason to put him on the commissioner's exempt list because we don't have enough information yet. So
an amazing signal because that's the first time we really got indication from the NFL. It does not look like the suspension would happen this season. It would likely happen next year when there's more clarity about Deshaun's legal status.
So if I'm Miami and I need a turnaround, which I'm thinking at 1-7, you need a turnaround. He's ready to play.
Yeah, I guess I might look at it. What are you going to do at 1-7? Even as great as Deshaun Watson is, Miami is going down the drain.
They are.
You have this problem that if I were actually the Dolphins, I would love that suspension
to happen right now. The season's lost.
And just
it's done.
Work through the punishment so then Deshaun is able to come back and play in a full season next year. But it's not going to work that way, and Goodell has basically sent that signal that Deshaun can play this year for a team who might want to pick him up. But the teams that want to pick him up, the teams that really need a quarterback, aren't going to be in the playoff running. They're already too far gone. I mean, the Dolphins, the Panthers, some have said the Eagles, some have said the Broncos. I don't think any one of them, even if they got Deshaun Watson to start, say, 2 weeks from now, which is about as fast as you could get him, start not this Sunday, but the following Sunday, he's not going to lead those teams to the playoffs. So his value this year isn't much. And the value next year is diminished by the potential suspension. Mm-hmm. So it's a very messy situation.
It's messy. You're so right. But I wouldn't worry too much about the Eagles. They hung 44 points in that victory yesterday.
Well, it was so interesting. We'll talk about the Eagles for a minute. In Philadelphia, there have been questions about Jalen Hurts and his ability to scale up to be a true NFL passing quarterback. Yesterday, they busted out. Offensively, they were exceptional. But a lot of their success was driven by the fact that they didn't ask Jalen to do as much. They ran the ball much more effectively yesterday. It seemed in previous weeks they were asking Jalen to do too much, and he just wasn't ready. I think if they could tap into the running game first and then make Jalen the second option, that's a better way for him to grow into his ultimate role.
And let's not ignore the fact that they were playing the now 0-8 Detroit Lions.
Yeah, that helps a lot of teams.
it helps a lot of teams.
You can't overread what the Eagles did yesterday. From my perspective, Jalen Hurts hasn't had enough of body of work to draw a conclusion about whether he can ever play in a long-term career in the NFL. But the howling in Philadelphia, you know, that's a tough fan base. And when they were losing, and they've been losing this year, there are a lot of fingers that were quickly looking at Jalen Hurts. But remember, Jalen didn't play that many games last year. He only played a handful of games, and then he's got a handful of games this year. The judgments come so fast for some of these quarterbacks that it's really tough. But I think the Eagles ought to stick with Jalen and see how far he can take them. I think he's worthy of future investment.
Well, even when Jalen Hurts' number got called last year, you know, Doug Peterson couldn't decide he would put Carson Wentz back in for half of it. I mean, he was in and out, and now he's dealing with a brand new coach in Nick Sirianni. So really, the fan base in Philly, it is tough. They need to give a little bit of grace and a little bit of transition period. But, you know, speaking of tough fan base, the Honey Badger didn't think so highly of Kansas City's fan base either.
No, we're going to have to talk about that and all things Monday Night Football tonight. It is the Chiefs and the Giants. We're going to come right back. I'm also going to offer you, when we return, a new word in Webster's Dictionary. And I'll ask you if you can name it and what it means to you personally.
All right.
A new word in Webster's Dictionary when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
All right, when I went to break, I was struck by the fact that Webster's Dictionary has added a new word to their glossy book. And it's a word that I think...
A glossy book. Does that mean it has to do with the gloss?
Well, it ties. Everything comes back to you, Carla.
Okay, bring it on.
The gloss. This word is a word that means several things to you, but first and foremost, let me explain it. It is the word, it's now in the dictionary, dad bod.
Oh.
Yes.
You said it has to do with me?
No.
You're calling me a dad bod?
No, I'm just saying you've had...
Okay, I'm walking off the set. I'm walking off the set.
The one thing I will never say is that you have a dad bod. I'm not particularly with all the hip-hop dancing you do.
Oh, my gosh. I know. And your bride is my workout partner. So we are working hard not to have a dad bod.
Well, the reason I raised dad bod and you is that you noted, it's the first time I ever heard the term, that picture of Tom Brady on his draft day.
Oh, remember, gosh, you're outing me there.
He was young and he had a dad bod at a very early stage.
True.
Now, he's gone on to be Tom Brady, TB12, and all the...
Avocado
training,
ice but, cream. And,
which
yeah.
then leads me to the next connection you have with being a dad bod is that your man friend embraced the TB12 diet
yes,
and has taken his body to a new level. And though he's only 24 years old and people have really thought this was scandalous, he's in incredible shape now thanks to the TB12 program.
That's very true.
So he is the
undad bod.
He is the undad bod is the whole reason I bring it up and connect you to this.
Okay. All right. I guess that's fair. I mean, that was a stretch, but I'm going to give it to you because I really don't want to walk off the set.
Fair enough.
So there we go.
And before we get a break, I want to welcome, we've got two new affiliates who are very excited, have joined the affiliate base of the Sports Map Radio Network. The stations are 105.5 and 97.5 FM. The Roar, two of our new affiliates in upstate South Carolina. Welcome to all of our listeners on those two stations in The Roar. We are delighted that you are with us and listening to The Boss and The Gloss. All right, we will be back in just a minute. We will take a look at the college football rankings, which will come out on Tuesday. We'll give you our picks for the top four when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.